You're listening to Stateside. I'm Cynthia Canty. In late 2016, then-Governor Snyder signed a new law, the Wrongful Imprisonment Compensation Act. It provides people wrongfully convicted in Michigan with $50,000 per year for every year they were behind bars to help the former inmate get a fresh start. How is the law working? Well, in the case of a man who wrongfully spent over 46 years in prison, not so well. In 2018, Richard Phillips became the longest-serving inmate in the nation to win exoneration after being cleared of a 1971 homicide. Yet he has not gotten a dime in compensation for his years in prison. Richard Phillips is back on Stateside here with us now. Richard, it is good to see you.
It's good to see you again, too. We're going to have to stop meeting like this.
People are
going to start talking.
And we also welcome back David Moran, who's co-founder of the University of Michigan Innocence Clinic. And that team led the effort to exonerate Mr. Phillips. Good to see you on Stateside again.
Thanks. Always a pleasure to be back.
You know, David, I think people heard our conversation about this time last year with Richard after he was exonerated. You hear of the Michigan Wrongful Imprisonment Compensation Act, and people figure, well, he'll get a financial helping hand. Did that happen?
It hasn't happened yet. The law went into effect in March of 2017, and only a handful of people so far have been compensated. So the law has not worked as it was intended, and we need some fixes. And one of the fixes we need is money. The legislature didn't allocate enough money to fully fund these claims. And we think that's about to change. Richard and I and others have testified in front of the legislature and have argued that the fund needs to be fully funded so that people like Richard can make their claims. And it passed the House, and we think it's going to pass the Senate.
When we say that $50,000 a year, how was that figure reached?
It's sort of a national average at this point. So at this point, 33 states, the District of Columbia and the federal system, have compensation laws. And they're all over the map as to how much they provide. But the more recent ones have tended to provide about $50,000. Some are more generous. Your listeners might be surprised to learn that the most generous in the country is Texas, which has had hundreds of exonerations and has compensated hundreds of people. And they provide $80,000 per year, plus a package of benefits that is not found really in most of the other states, such as medical care, dental care, mental health care, help with college tuition, help with school funds for children, all sorts of additional benefits. So states can be more generous, but $50,000 right now is about the average.
So, Richard, when you were released from prison in 2017, how long had you been in?
A lot of people like to say years, but me, I like counting days. So in order to give you the full impact of what I did, it was 19,700 days. And the reason why I know is because I Googled it. Even though I'm not a real good professional Googler, I'm just learning the phone, but I did Google that, and it was 19,700 days.
And first, when you were released and then exonerated, so that was a kind of a two-phase thing, and exonerated last year, what were you told to expect in terms of support or compensation?
Well, actually, I wasn't told anything because the process is a little different for people that are convicted of crimes, because when an exoneree is released, there's no program set up for them. There's no programs in the prison system that is going to give you the idea that we've made a mistake. So everybody that's in prison, you're there because you're guilty. So there's no programs to be set up for people that are guilty, except for the pre-release program. But for the people that are actually innocent, nothing.
So and when you walked out after 19,700 days, what was there for you?
There was no support except for the support that I got from my attorneys, the Innocence Clinic, and a few people that donated money to my GoFundMe program, which I appreciated because I needed that very much to get started on. I wasn't getting any support at first.
I contrast that with the suite of services that you just described from Texas, that apart from the money, all of those other services are very key.
Right. Now, one way Richard was lucky in that there was a check waiting for him, a few thousand dollars from the Innocence Network, because he was exonerated by an Innocence Network member organization. One of our prior exonerees, Julie Baumer, very generously offered up a room in her home that she shares with her elderly father in Roseville, Michigan. And so Richard had a place to stay for the first month until he was able to find a place of his own to go to. But without some of those support systems, there really would have been nothing.
So just for get everybody on the same page, how old were you when you went away?
25.
And how old are you now?
I'll be 73 in about a week or two.
Well, happy early birthday. Tell us, how has this last year been? How are you getting by?
Well, this last year has been overwhelming, really, because I've been from destitute to, you know, doing fairly well with my art, because it had gotten to the point where as though I wasn't having any money to support myself. And so I created some art while I was in prison. And so when I got out, I said to myself, well, my back is to the wall and I don't really have anywhere else to turn in terms of finances. So I said, well, I've got this as an asset. Might as well try to sell it.
How did that feel, having to sell that artwork?
Well, that didn't feel too good, because my artwork was something that I treasured as part of my soul. I mean, I put so much effort, so much emotion into those pieces of art when I was in prison, because it was keeping me sane to be able to do the time. And so when I get out, to be able to have to sell them was like having your kids up for adoption or something. You know what I'm saying? You just get so attached to something like that because you put so much emotion into it that you don't really want to let it go. Had my compensation been awarded to me earlier, I probably wouldn't have even been selling art. But it got to the point where there was no choice. And so I put it up for sale. And one thing led to another, and it went all over the world. It closed down the CBS website because I did an interview with Steve Hartman on CBS, and that turned out to be quite fruitful in terms of interest. And so that kind of generated some income for me. So now things are looking a lot better.
Do you feel like you've got something that you can do? You can keep creating art.
Yes.
Is this something that you're looking at that you could say, all right, I can start bringing in money on a more regular basis by selling my art now that you've got this momentum going?
Right. And it kind of halfway took my worry away from the Compensation Act. Even though they say I have that coming, that was never my concern when I got out. My concern was to be free. Give me back what you took from me, which was my freedom, all those years, my life, my family, everything that I own. Give me at least the opportunity to get that back. All I wanted was my freedom. And so the Compensation Act was something that just came about within the last 2 or 3 years. That was never in the back of my mind.
But getting free is one thing, what you do when you're out and you got nothing to go on.
Well, I didn't really have a whole lot, but now I think that I can use my artwork to make it in this world, even if I didn't get compensation.
David, I know even Wayne County Prosecutor Kim Worthy very publicly admitted that Richard had been wrongly convicted. She would recommend he get paid from the exoneration fund. So couldn't he even get some money? I guess it's very confusing, I think, why he doesn't get anything.
Well, a series of roadblocks were erected by the prior Attorney General's office. The prior Attorney General really fought hard against these compensation claims. They look like lawsuits. They're called claims, and they're filed in the Court of Claims in Lansing, Michigan, which is the same court you'd file a claim against, for example, if a highway overpass fell on you and injured you.
So it's like you're suing the state.
It's like you're suing the state.
Okay.
And the statute was intended to be used in such a way that these cases could be settled and resolved quickly and the money paid out. And instead, they fought them all tooth and nail. And they even came up with surprise statutes of limitations that weren't found in the statute. And so about a dozen of these cases were dismissed because they weren't filed within 6 months of March 2017, even though there's nothing in the statute that says anything about a six-month limit. So all sorts of procedural barriers were set up. And so it was the exact opposite of what we had fought for 8 years. I've been involved in the negotiations with the Attorney General's office and with others to get this legislation passed, and it was really everything that we fought against was coming to pass, that these cases were being dragged out. And
what's your sense as to why that was happening?
I really don't know. I think there was some resistance in the Attorney General's office to the idea that these people really were innocent. And when we were working to draft this law, we encountered a lot of that, of concerns about people who aren't really innocent are going to try and get this money. And our counter to that was telling people how hard it is to get exonerated, how few of these cases we can win. And so when people get exonerated, it's because there's really overwhelming evidence that they didn't do it. And so even in a case like Richard's, where Kim Worthy stood with me in March of 2018 and said, this man is innocent. He deserves to be compensated. Even in a case like that, they weren't giving in. Now, the problem is the lack of money in the fund. So that's the first thing that needs to happen is even a willing attorney general can't concede to giving money that's not there. So we need to get the money in the fund. And once that happens, I'm confident that the new attorney general, Dana Nessel, and her people will take a different attitude towards these cases and try and move them more expeditiously. And sure, if somebody files who's not innocent, who got their conviction reversed for a reason having nothing to do with innocence, then the attorney general should fight those cases. But my understanding from the cases that have been filed so far is that those cases are non-existent to very rare.
If you've just joined us, we're talking with David Moran, who's with the University of Michigan Innocence Clinic, the co-founder, and someone that he worked to exonerate, and that is Richard Phillips, who spent 19,700 days behind bars after being arrested in 1971 for a murder he did not commit. And he was exonerated officially last year, but has yet to get a dime in compensation for the time in prison. Was there anything, David, in Governor Whitmer's budget request for this?
There was. Governor Whitmer's budget request specifically included a $10 million allocation for this fund. And Representative Steve Johnson from Kent County sponsored a bill to put $10 million into the fund, and it passed unanimously, and then it passed the House unanimously. And it's waiting action in the Senate, and we're hoping for speedy action in the Senate, and it goes to the governor.
When you think of this central question, how much is a wrongfully convicted person's lost time worth? And you say now we have 33 states and the District of Columbia. What's the national sentiment? Is this something that you're seeing more and more states are addressing this question and coming up with compensation laws?
Yes. Yeah, so about 12 years ago when I first started to look at the issue of compensation laws, it was about half that. There were about 17 states, I think, in 2007 that had compensation laws. And some of these laws, like Wisconsin's, hadn't been updated since the turn of the previous century. So, for example, Wisconsin, the law was that you could get $25,000 max, no matter how long you've been in prison. Well, that may have been good money back in 1908, mm-hmm. but mm-hmm. wasn't very
good
money.
It's not good money in 2019.
But the number of states now that have passed these compensation laws has about doubled, and many of them have been updated to give more money, to give additional services. And I should mention, the Michigan law that Governor Snyder passed, there was a companion bill that provided that people like Richard who were exonerated could receive the same services as a parolee, which is certainly better than nothing. But what we've found is that most of the exonerees haven't really availed themselves of those services because they don't really want to go to the parole office mm-hmm. and sit with other parolees. It's kind of like being back in the Department of Corrections again. We're looking at a number of tweaks mm-hmm. in the compensation bill to fix some of these problems. I'd like to see that one fixed, so that there's some other source of services that they don't have to go through the parole office.
How much, when you apply this formula in Michigan's law, how much should Richard get from the state of Michigan?
About $2.3 million.
Which would ease a lot of worries, wouldn't it?
Well, it would take care of a lot of phone bills and house bills and rent. Yeah, it would take care of a lot of the bills.
Richard, you, as we talked about, you sold some of your artwork to raise money. Was the sale helpful?
Yes, it was. Very helpful. There's a lot of people out there that really reached out, and I'm so grateful that, you know, I had a chance to meet and talk to a lot of them. I've even been to Portland speaking for justice reform. I've been to the state capitol speaking for the House Bill 4286 to try to get that $10 million reinstated into the fund. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I've been busy.
So give us a sense, because it's been about a year since we first met
Matter
you here.
Matter of fact, I think it was May 9th.
It was May 9th. So how would you compare how you felt then and how you're feeling right now about your situation?
Actually, I feel blessed, really, just to be here, to have lived long enough to really have a chance to enjoy my freedom. And so when I first appeared here in May of last year, you know, I was a little worried about where I would go, what I would do, and how I would survive. And so now I have a little better perspective on that because of the people that I've been around, the people that I've met, you know, along the way in the last year or so. You know, things are looking pretty bright now. So I have no complaints whether I get compensation or not. I'm going to still enjoy myself.
And have you made connections with family, with old friends? What have you been able to do?
I've made some connection with old friends. I've made some connection with family. I've still got some more connections to make. So things are looking better. I'm happier than I was last year. Let me put it that way. I've got my own place now. So, you know, things are looking up.
And the artwork?
The artwork is doing great.
You're still painting?
Yes. I've established my own business, RichardPhillipsArtGallery.com that I started, and I do pets. I've painted about five of Dave's pets. They're called his Richard Phillips Pet Portraits.
Huh.
So I'm doing pretty good right now, but I could be doing better if I could take care of all my bills. One of these days I'll get compensation. Who knows? If I don't, I'm still going to be all right.
What kind of aha moments or wow is this different moments are you having? We were just talking before we began recording about walking into the grocery store and picking out cereal and the difference from what you could pick when you went in 1971 and what's there today.
Well, the variety is a lot different. You know, that probably a lot of people thinks that's comical, but it is amusing that years ago they just had the regulars, cornflakes, Cheerios, and Sugar Pops or something like that. But there was no whole aisle full of different cereals. But, you know, I'm getting used to all of that now. So I'm just taking my time and just blending in with life, just trying to enjoy myself.
What do you see for Richard and other exonerees? Because he's not the only one waiting for some kind of a helping hand.
Well, I'm constantly amazed at how quickly our exonerees, who often have been in for decades, Richard's the longest in American history. But I'm amazed at how quickly they adapt to the changes in society that have passed since they were in. So Richard is texting. He uses emojis. He's on the web. He got his license pretty quick. He's got a car. And we found that the great majority of our exonerees catch up with the technological changes and the societal changes pretty quickly. But there's still that big gap. And there's all that time where they weren't earning money. There's all that time that they weren't advancing in their careers. There's all that time that's been lost with the family relationships, which are often impossible to build after so many years, or in many cases, key family members are gone. They've passed away while the client was in prison. So people are resilient, and it's one of the blessings I have from this clinic is we've now exonerated 21 people, 18 men, 3 women, who between them served a little over 300 years in prison. And the vast majority of them are doing really far better than I think I would if I had been through what they had been through. And so I'm constantly awed by how people can recover from such a horrific event.
David Moran, co-founder of the University of Michigan Innocence Clinic, and Richard Phillips, the longest serving exoneree in U.S. history. And we'll be tracking along with you as the progress of getting some money for this fund and also tweaking the law as you see some changes that need to be made. Thank you, both of you.